Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I'd like to welcome you to Garden of Enlightenment with Lou Uwaldev. This show is sponsored by Late Night Poets, and we're one of many groups on allpoetry.com. It's free to join, and you can, you know, you don't need to pay to join this site to write poetry and read poetry and share poetry. These shows are supported by poetry. Of course. And how you can find us is you can go to Amazon.com, and on Amazon.com you will see a variety of books by Jean Fitzpatrick. And give me just a second and I'll give you a little information on that. I'm kind of a little out of it tonight, so hold on one second. That's what Benadryl does to you, makes you sleepy. You can find the Art of Seduction books, all the different shows, Share the Laughter, the Virtuosos, all the shows that we have, Volume 1, Volume 2, you can find them there. And this is how these radio shows are supported. So I'm going to go ahead to my phone lines because we've got lots of people on tonight. And give me just a second. Let's see, here we go. My first caller is caller 804. Who am I speaking with?
Hello, Liu. Salwa.
Hi.
Hi, Salwa. How are you doing, girl?
Doing great. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy you called in. And I know you're on a tight schedule today, but let me get more people in, and we'll do a couple of open poetry, and then we'll get into the readers. Okay, so hold on, Salwa. Okay, so our next caller is 703. Who am I speaking with?
Hello, this is Tom.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing this evening? It's so good to hear you.
I'm good, you know. Just supporting the state of Virginia.
Pardon me? Well, so I love hearing you reading comments, so I'm excited when you guys call in. Okay, we got another caller. Hold on one second. Caller 585, who am I speaking with?
Louise, I heard you deliver the introductions for tonight's show after hearing your music. And then hearing your voice for the first time in months as the hostess again, somehow I felt that all was right with the world.
All is right in the universe. You know, the weather is getting cooler, so it's just, oh, my God, I'm tired of the hot weather. I'm ready for fall. It's good to hear your voice, Lauren. I've missed you guys so much. And we have another caller. Ooh-wee, aren't I a lucky girl? Caller 520, who am I speaking with?
This is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
You're rite of passage, right?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Okay, I just
want
to make sure. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Welcome everybody to the show. And I want to welcome everybody who's listening. What's great about this is you can follow along the group. You can read the poems with the artist who wrote it, or somebody will ask for a reader, or they have a SoundCloud, and then we share our opinions, and we always try to be positive. We're not because these are people's sayings, they're their meanings, they're the things that they can't release, or things that they hide, or the creativity that they have inside. So we're here to compliment and encourage this art, these poetry lyrics. So let me go ahead and start right away. Okay. Give me just a second. I'm still kind of out of it. So hold on. Not as quick as I used to be. Copy. But I'll get there. Okay.
All right. I like it slow.
Yeah. Slow and easy. Molasses. Yeah, I love butter molasses on my pancakes. Okay, taste.
That sounds
all right.
Good.
It is good. So I have dropped my first poem in, and welcome everybody to the show. And we're going to get started, and I'm going to drop the first poem. It's by Sunflower Memories by Amethyst Moon Jade. What a beautiful name. And our first caller to call in is ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, Salwa!
Okay. Hello, everyone, first, and I'm going to go ahead. Sunflower Memories. She sat on her porch looking over the fields of sunflowers her had planted. There were many different types of sunflowers, and he had planted several different varieties. The giant mammoth with seed for eating, the smaller black, one for bird seed and sunflower oil. She smiled as she thought of him and the combine going through the rows of sunflowers. Her favorite were the varieties she grew to grace the dining room, tables, and to sell at the local farmer's market. As she rocked in her rocker, she thought about when they had first gotten the farm. They had no clue about how to run a farm, but they learned. They had a few goats for milk and some sheep for wool that she learned to shear and comb. They planted cans of different berries, and she would enter the jam in the fair. The wind blew gently as her memories floated one after another. The year the tornado came and tore up the field that was linear. But they didn't give up. They rebuilt and replanted, and it became better farms. She remembered how strong he was when he carried her over the threshold of the new house when they were first married. He was tall, muscular, and well-built, sandy hair that would fall in his eyes, which were as blue as the sky above. They never had children, though they had one son. Then he got sick. It was a cancer, they said. He lasted only 3 months after the diagnosis. He wasted away to a mere skeleton of this former robustness. Even now, though he's been gone for years, she still remembers his last, his gentleness, and how he came to love the fields of sunflower and the farm. I wrote this poem in honor of my parents, both gone now, who grew up in Kansas. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You did such a beautiful read with this. So I want to thank you. And I also want to thank Moonjade. You know, for me, listening to you read this was like going back through my childhood, you know, being on the farm with my uncle, gardening and planting trees and flowers with my mother and cutting them for the table. And the only thing I hated to was make peach jam because she always would grow those peaches with the hair on them. So it always felt like you had a like wool on you, just would just make you itchy, you know. And it does, you know. So many illnesses devastate us. The beauty of our lives, the beauty of our body, but you know, there are also the beautiful memories that we make with these people. And this was just gorgeous. What did you think? Thank you, Sawa. What did you think about this poem, Tom?
I loved it. It just it reminded me a whole lot about my theory from working on a dairy farm and some other stuff. In brief times in my life, I've been around farms and farmers. To me, they're all gamblers because you never know what the weather's going to bring. You never know what the prices of the market are going to be. You may have a great yield, but so might everybody else, and all of a sudden, it'll be worse than the year when you had to fight like crazy to get what little you could get in. It's a wild business, and you got to love it. And this poem really struck me because of all the love that was in it and the love for for everything that was going on. I mean, because you love the land, you love the people, and you love it all. Because if you don't, you can't do it. You really can't do it. I really admire it.
I was going to ask you, but, you know, just listening to you, this comment, and also with Sawa, I mean, it's amazing how a certain flower or a certain scent or something will bring us, it's just like, I love going by dairy cows. I have to stop and look at their faces. There's just something about those big eyes and their ears and the way that they chew when they look at you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tom. Gorgeous comment. What did you think, Laurent?
Well, this is a really well-told story that I like a lot. You know, it's funny, some people have a photograph or other brief memento of a loved one. She has entire fields of sunflowers in this story to remember her husband by. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really well-told. I was kind of afraid it would have a sad ending, but, you know, that's the way things go. It seems like farmers have they deal with a lot of fertilizers. I think the incidence of cancer is higher in farmers, perhaps, than it is in the general population. But the story was quite moving. Something about Kansas, it's a very iconic state. Well done.
Agreed, Laurent. Thank you. And what did you think, Katie?
Oh, Kathy? Yeah.
Kathy? I'm sorry. Kathy.
That's all right. It's beautiful. My father is a gardener, and he just, you know, he had this love of nature that was so profound. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got that from this. You know, I really got the love for the sunflowers, for the fields, for the milk,
mm-hmm.
And the sheep, and everything that went with it. You know, it was just very well done and very lovely. You know, I liked
yes.
even the funk that she used, you know, to form this beautiful piece. It was just lovely. I really liked it.
Agreed.
And in the end, you know, it's just life, you know, and life goes on. And, you know, she made that very, very plain that he still remembered his laugh, his gentleness, and how he came to love the fields of sunflowers.
Yeah. And, you know, imagine that she sees him smiling every time she sees him starting to blossom. Beautiful comment,
right.
Kathy. Thank you. And we have another caller, caller 612, who's calling.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Frank? 512? Hi, Frank. How you doing?
Yes. For a moment there, I thought it was wrong.
Were you able to hear the poem?
Yes, I was able to hear the poem. It was a very stunning piece. I thought it was full of beautiful, beautiful metaphors, exquisite writing, and by all means, it was a painful piece there, a remembrance of a loved one, you know. And I thought the last stanza there was very indicative of how powerful this poem is when she described his state of illness there, the cancer itself. But I like the analogy there to the sunflowers and how much they were appreciated in this poem, not only by the writer, but also by the loved one, the deceased one. So it's a great poem, a very powerful poem.
Great, yeah, it was. Thank you, everybody. Okay, I'm going to drop the next poem in, and then we'll get to some of the readers. This one is by, I might have to redo it again. Can you guys see it? It's by Andrew Blightman, or do you need me to repost it?
The self-portrait.
I can repost it in case some of you can't get it. Hold on. Here we go. And our next reader is Tom.
Okay. Self-portrait by Andrew Blightman. Even in the face of many faces, a reflection of a reflection is still a reflection. The refraction of light projecting the identity of the artist into the brave mirror land as a friend found within himself as the clever image. His imagination guiding his brush, his inkwell, the rockwell and foundation of painting a poem in acrylic. On a canvas and a silk screen that shall soon become the cover of a magazine. As the focal point of the piece de resistance of the gallery of self and the soul and the reflection of reflection made whole by the experiment's grand completion as an icon and iconoclast of an American generation. End poem.
Thank you, Tom. That was a fantastic read. And thank you, Andrew, for this amazing poem. And let's get some comments. What did you think, Sawa?
I see in his author note, I use this triple self-portrait by Norman Rockwell as my poem, although it wasn't listed. So I think he's really, in the beginning I thought it was about him, but perhaps it's still about him. But I see here how he described even it's not only poetry, it's also a form of art can be reflection of someone, what your emotion, what you want to put there. And I think that's what, even in poetry, takes reflection means something we take time to really reflect. It's not something momentarily. It's deep. Mm-hmm. It requires time. And also he used imagination guiding his brush. I really love this comparison between the art of the poet and the brush. They both have self and soul.
Mm-hmm.
I he did an amazing job.
Yeah, he did. I was just thinking about what you were just talking about, and I went back and looked at the picture that he wrote for, and I really liked how he said, in that second line, he said, even though there's many faces, the second line says, a reflection of a reflection is still a reflection. And, you know, it's just like, you know, the reason I laughed because that just tickled me pink because I had never really thought about that. You're looking at your reflection and then painting your reflection on a canvas or something. And I just, the family photos that he did and stuff like this, this is just wonderfully. Thank you, Sawa. Fantastic comment. Tom, I know you read it, but what did you think?
Well, if you notice, on the board where he's painting his picture of himself, he also has portraits of other great painters, Rembrandt, Van Gogh, and others posted up on the board. And there's a lot, both in the poem and in the picture he chose, of humor about how we try to represent things truthfully, honestly, and clearly, and yet still it's what we see. It's our reflection of what we have reflected upon. And that one line you read is a great example of that. But also things like the artist into the brave mirror land as a friend, or talking about how what he painted created a form of poetry because of the statement that Rothko made about America and everything else like that. Very striking piece, very clever in the way you put it together, too.
Yes. Agreed. Thank you. Thank you so much, Tom. And what did you think, Laurent?
It's a real pleasure to see someone write in praise of an iconic American painter, Norman Rockwell. And the picture, Triple Self-Portrait, is so iconic. I like the lines that you read earlier, Liu, and I can answer those lines with of the gallery of self and the soul, and the reflection of reflections made whole. He kind of finished the second line, I think, with that line. Great piece, great poem. I enjoyed Andrew's poetry. I haven't read anything by him in some time.
Yeah. His picture kind of reminds me of him looking in on his reflection, because it looks like he's looking in the room. Almost looking at us, yeah. So true. What did you think? Thank you, Laurent. What did you think, Kathy?
That's beautiful, Paul. I really liked it. Very well written. It has this touch of humor too. The reflection of a reflection is still a reflection, and the painting is humorous. I believe. He's painting himself as a young man, but he's not that young. I think I can see glasses on him. And he doesn't have the glasses in the picture.
Well, you know, charcoal pencils don't have gray and silver streaking in them.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I've seen a similar picture of an animal painting itself, and it was a dog, and it was painting itself. It was a hound dog, and painting itself as a German Shepherd. real noble German shepherd. But at any rate, that's an aside. This is a wonderfully done piece, I think. And painting a poem in acrylic on a canvas and a silk screen that shall be seen become the cover of a magazine. I love the inner rhyme in this as well. It's as a focal point, the piece to the soul of the gallery of self and soul. Very well written. And I think so too. I love it.
Thank you, Kathy. Excellent comment. And what did you think, Frank?
What was said here? That sums up in the first two lines, which is pretty much the poem. In the face of many faces, a reflection, or reflection of beauty. You know, beauty has its own in nature, its own essence and form. You know, in this case here, what I enjoyed about this poem, you know, although it's inspired, that something said by Rockwell, there's a certain understanding as well about our own reflection there, you know, and how we perceive ourselves in the mirror, and how we can really just project our image and how we want to feel, you know, because we do find our insecurities at times, things that really take us away from the mirror, or even to the point when they do take us near, they make us very judgmental. And I thought this poem, although it has a sense of brilliance and wit, really captured to me the whole essence of the artist there, you know, through the, you know, the whole notion of his own art there, you know, and I really like that. I really like that whole image that was projected in this poem.
Oh, excellent comment. Thank you. And I know I have Bobby on the line, but I can't see her to, I think, Bobby, are you there? Are you on? Okay. Bobby, what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you, were you able to listen to this poem? Would you like to comment?
Yes, ma'am. I did listen to it, and I enjoyed it. It's a wonderful example of a crisis, talking about the artist Norman Rockwell sketching, or should say painting himself, self-image or self-portrait. Having done a couple of self-portraits myself, it's interesting because you look and you go, do I really look like that? And it's still, when you do the self-portrait, you still, even though you're looking at a reflection, the product is still passing through your filters of life experience. So unless you're, you know, a photograph is the only thing that's going to give you accuracy. You're still going to get interpretation from the medium. So that's, I like what he says, his imagination guiding his brush. Also, his life experiences are passing, what he's seeing is passing through his filters. So it's an interesting, and I've always been fascinated by this piece of art in that it is, you're still interpreting what you see. Even though you're looking at yourself, it's still you get a reflection not only of what you see, but what you think you see.
True. Thank you, Bobby, and welcome to the show. And also, I want to thank Gray Eyes. Gray Eyes is on. I had to log back in. I don't know what happened. It kicked me off. Maybe it's. did you want to make a comment on this poem, Gray? I don't know if you had a chance to read it or not.
I did, yeah, and I thought it was quite beautifully done. You know, he captures the idea of the triple self-portrait, portrayed in a masterful way, and it was just an excellent poem. Fabulous read, Tom.
Okay. Now, for some reason, Tom dropped, so hopefully he'll call back. So we're going to do one more open poetry because I know some people are on a short schedule today. So this next one is by Barty Balk and Chrysanthemums. And our next reader is Laurent.
All right. This is called Chrysanthemums by our man Barty. They cannot hide her nervous grin. There's something to be said with quiet observation. One can hold the pose without objection. The way she dressed, hidden behind it, so looks like them. It becomes her. I've heard a brilliant laughter such as this before, and seen her flowery dress, her sweeping flaxen ginger locks, purple lowly cheeks, roll on crimson lipstick, traces waxing raindrops, caught beneath the crippled cloud. She loud as thunder beads, and she loud as thunder beads and loosely thread, sliding off and down her powdered chin, pain so lonely, thinly spread. She rocks in her own flamboyant plastic pot, chrysanthemums in bloom, a floriade of matter and percussion, strings and bottle penetrating the privacy of my thoughts from a costly, hollow cafe floor. Back and forth, the trill and throttle in every pause, the tang and clatter of every clause, the midday possum proud. Oh my, all the bloomers and broadcast cause, all the cliches and incongruent applause. Imagine the thrill that shone, her nervous grin, her truant glance in the twilight. You wouldn't even notice if it weren't for the resilience of her eau de plume, the unfamiliar vibrant blossom, and wrinkled petals of brilliant madness and attention. Flowers barely half as sweet as the color of her chromatic skin. Love loves to bloom. And I wonder, did she laugh as much when she was young? Violence and innocence her cage. Hostility and sadness, the buds of frail beauty and rejection. Private blushes she held within. It was the hidden, frigid, frosty frown of glossy buttercup and dazzled daisies and terracotta. Disapproval grim and surely, and I made a picture of Beretta of my own. Something savored, something said. Listen to the bark, mocking laughter in her favorite street cafe. Hate loves to hate. Can't hate it, becomes them. Some say she lost her balance. What of it? End poem.
Mm. Wonderful. Read Laurent. And I am always smitten with Barbara's poetry. You know, I love his detail to attention and his, and I was, I really like this because I like to sit down in quiet places or sit in my car and by myself with a cup of coffee and just watch whatever's around me, whether it's flowers blooming, the way people dress, the way people behave or what I see happening, you know, and right here where, you know, he's talking about being surrounded by these magnificent colors that are just draped in such glorious beauty. And then, you know, right here where he says, and I wonder, did she laugh as much as she did when she was young? You know, and it just makes you question something that you look at, you know, to think about, you know, what somebody has gone through. Yeah, we do think about what things people have gone through, but when we're surrounded by this, do we look a little deeper into the creases of the smile of the face and the silver tint of the hair that, you know, tells us so many things that we've experienced? You know, I laugh as much as now as I did that back when I was young, so silver hair didn't mean anything.
No, you're still
young.
We
all go
you know.
Silver young. So what does that say? Yeah. So, you know, I just, this beautiful read, Laurent. Let's get some comments. Sawa, what did you think?
Sawa,
are you on mute? Yes, I am.
I'm so sorry.
No, she's there. Okay.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, just call back if you did, if you get dropped.
No, I'm here. No, I didn't get dropped. I was on mute. Sorry. And I forgot.
Well, that's
I was
okay.
laughing when you were reading. I was smiling because I do the same exact thing. I sit, not in my car necessarily, but coffee, like outside or coffee shop, outdoor,
mm-hmm.
and just love watching what's happening around me. And this, I love how he started it. They cannot hide her nervous grin. There is something to be said for quiet observation. It's so true. Sometimes, mm-hmm. taste, like when you look at someone, you can see from their expression, happy, sad, if you pay attention with your heart. You really can see that. I love how he just not only described how she's dressed, how she... all the emotion, mm-hmm. he knows her just from observation. This is really amazing. Such a great poem. There's so much, one after the mm-hmm. other, amazing poem tonight, really.
Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. Thank you, Sawa. Excellent comment.
Oh, my pleasure.
How about you, Tom?
My pleasure.
Well, excuse me. I really like the way he makes an interplay between both himself as the watcher and she as the person he observes, and how who she is mingles with both her environment and her judgment and reaction to her environment. And I mean, I really love that center stands through our verse that where he goes, she rocks in her own flamboyant plastic pot, chrysanthemums in bloom, a floriad of matter and percussion, strings and bottle penetrating the privacy of my thoughts from across the hollow cafe
mm-hmm.
floor. Back and forth, the trill and throttle of every pause, the clang clatter of every clause, the midday possum proud. I mean, I just, that is just such a delightful interplay of both the watcher and the watch, and the way in which they almost become one person in many ways, because you
mm-hmm.
let yourself be so thoroughly consumed by what you're watching that it's almost as if you take their place in a way, and share their vibrance. And I liked how he spoke, the poet spoke about how you become that which you love, but
mm-hmm.
then raises the question about what's the relationship between the person and their environment when they hate it. And that last line, some say she lost her balance. What of it? It's a sharp ending. He really leaves you with... You've been watching all of this
mm-hmm.
in your own way by reading the poem. Now, where are you in relationship
mm-hmm.
to all this? Very sharp and very, very entertaining.
Agreed. Wonderful comment, Tom. Thank you. How about you, Laurent?
This is a pretty deep piece. It's written a little differently, which appeals to me. It's not same old, same old. And I get the strong sense of her life being related to, or being told, her life being told through the chrysanthemum, almost as a metaphor.
Uh-huh.
I've heard of brilliant laughter, seen her flowery dress, her sweeping flaxen ginger locks, purple lowly cheeks, roll-on crimson lipstick, all of those colors, followed by the next stanza, somehow talk to me about flowers and her wanting to bloom again and the difficulties involved with that. Love loves to bloom, but hate loves to hate. This is a poem to read probably three times
mm-hmm.
carefully, because with
mm-hmm.
Bardi, all the words mean something.
Yeah, I got a big kick out of that little B he put towards the bottom of the poem. You see that B? He was
yes.
busy bee writing all these words down. Excellent comment. Thank you, Laurent. And what did you think, Kathy?
Okay, I'm going back to look at it again here. Oh, you know, this has got, as Laura said, so much depth. I could read this 5 times and find something new. You know, the talking about her name as she's sitting there and she's got all these colors, just exuding color. And I think of a kind of a bohemian feel to her, you know.
Very floral,
with lots of beads. Very floral with lots of beads. And you know, and then he talks about how he wondered if she laughed as much as when she was young. Violence and innocence of age. Hostility and sadness with the frail beauty of rejection. Private blushes she held within. And then it's the last line. It says, some say she lost her balance. What is it? You know, her, what happened to her when she was young probably had a great deal to do with her moral, almost over the top, bohemian name as she got older. It was like she had to dress very flamboyantly and very colorfully to bring herself up. I do that, you know. When I'm feeling down, I will dress and you know, like tropical colors, you know, or something like that. But I could read this, so I could read this
couple
again.
Times, yeah. Agreed. I agree with you. Thank you, Kathy. Frank, before I let you comment, I need to ask a question. Tom, can you hold, do you need to read next before you leave, or do you want me to have Sawa go before you?
Go ahead and have Sawa go before me.
Okay, so let me finish getting some more comments. Frank, what did you think of this poem?
Well, I would say for me, it's an honor here to go after each and every one's comments there. It's a very exquisite poem. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem. It's just that whole notion, I have to say, it brought me back to the cafes of Europe here, you know, seeing you know, the bustle up there, you know, the bustling life there in Europe, and seeing all ages there, in particular seniors there in the cafes. I recall my days of eating churros and coffee there and chocolate. And it just brought to me that imagery there of throughout the poem was a reflection of who he speaks, of who he mentions there. You know, we at times see images, you know, throughout, in particular when you see them in the city, you know, come and go. But when you actually concentrate on an image there that you see of someone that just fascinates you, and you wonder what's going on, what's behind that grin, that frown, you know, that happiness, that sadness. You know, you actually get to the point where you want to know that person, discover a little about that person. I think all of us, you know, whether we're young or old, we all have a story of our own, you know. And I think it only takes time for us to take that time to want to get to know people, to know about their story. And this is just another example of a story here of a person who exists there in our society, who perhaps we don't know who that person is. But through this poem, we surely do know what this person really was, in essence, there. So I really thought that was striking there. There was no name in this poem given to her, but the way it was described, I almost felt that I could relate to her, and I felt that I knew her in a way.
Wonderful comment, Frank. Thank you. And what did you think of this poem, Bobby? Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
I'm focused on the title, Chris, because I think there's a lot of hidden meaning. I read the poem several times. It has wonderful visual imagery in it. But to liken the protagonist to a chrysanthemum is to say a number of things. Not only is a chrysanthemum an annual dies, but it also there's also varieties that are perennials every year. And in his poem, I see she laughs the way she this is part of her is an annual. Part of her personality has a season, and then it dies. And then when she comes back in her perennial form in another season, she's something different, but she looks the same. Also, chrysanthemums are used they're a specimen plant in the fall season used to add color to the environment as everything else is dying off. So I think he's implying also that in her environment, she adds color to the drab surroundings around her. Her ebullient laughter, her flowery dress, her ginger locks. She punctuates her environment with a flamboyance that calls attention to her. And that's just by looking at the title, that's what I'm getting from this is the significance. Plus the fact that the chrysanthemum is not native to Europe or to America. It comes from China, comes from Japan. So also perhaps she is a transplant. She's not native to where she is. So she's bringing a different culture and a different mindset. So I'm seeing all these things from the poem and from the title.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, now that you're talking about that, you know, chrysanthemums are very thickly layered in petals. You know, they symbolize friendship. They also show loyalty and devotion. And, you know, and they're part of the daisy family, you know, that bright open face of ornamental flowers. And it just, to me, it wasn't just the chrysanthemum that was ornamental. It was her coloring, her flowers, her personality, her behavior.
Very, and very
agreed.
And very.
Yes.
The way she.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
Personality.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Thank you, Bobby. And Gray, would you like to make a comment?
Sure. I mean, it's hard to top those comments, but you know, I thought the poem was deeply layered. He painted the portrait beautifully with his words, and it was an outstanding poem with an excellent read, Lauren.
You're supposed to be the host, and I'm your co-host. You're not supposed to sound so professional. That's supposed to be me.
So is this scripted now?
I'm going to ask Salwa if she would like to have her SoundCloud played, or she would like to read this entirely open in the different languages.
Either way, it's fine.
No, Salwa, because I would like to know, what would you like to do? What a beautiful rose.
Okay, let me read it then. That's fine.
oh,
yay!
Okay.
Throne of a rose, les épines d'une rose. I start with the French and end with English. Les larmes ont découpé mon tendre cœur avec des épines de rose. Je cherche des réponses que je ne trouverai jamais. Comme j'aimerais savoir comment me changer. Tant de petites choses éveillent mes chagrins. Y a-t-il vraiment une fin pour hier? Tears carve my tender heart with tones of a rose. I'm looking for answers I never find. I wish I know how to change myself. So many little things awake my chagrin. Is there really an end for yesterday and this poem?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? No offense to your SoundClouds, but I prefer to hear you read.
Okay. Thank
that
you.
Was beautiful, Sarah. That was beautiful.
I love your honesty.
Thank you.
Sometimes I'm afraid
okay,
I lose
so,
my voice.
No, you shouldn't be. Beautiful, beautiful poem in Reed Sawa.
Thank you.
You know, when I look at I tend to look at things a little deeper sometimes than people. I notice that people, and in fact, that's why I like to watch things, because it's amazing to me how people can walk by and not see the curiosity, not see the color, not see the beauty, not see that life is passing them by. You know, and when you were talking about that rose, I was looking at that rose where, you know, how delicate, you know, the scent draws us in, the beauty draws us in, and then you look at the rose, and if you look close, you can see the little veins in the petals. To me, it's almost like a beating heart. And, you know, and when I look at things like, you know, the way you were looking at this rose, it's like things, patterns, and we start seeing patterns, and sometimes those patterns are something that we can see within ourselves, and things that we, you know, which are good, which are strong, you know, beating, things that which we need to change, you know, like, why do I get so upset when this happens, you know, but all of us have our thorns. Ask Gray. Gray, you got a thorn, right? Gray? I guess he's making himself something.
Yes, I do. I do. I do have a thorn. Yeah. Okay.
So what did you think about her poem, Gray?
I thought it was beautifully done. You know, you paint such a beautiful picture with your words. You know, it's sad yet beautiful at the same time and hopeful. You know, an end for yesterday, is there really an end for yesterday? You know, that leaves you with that haunting hope of tomorrow to come. So just a beautiful, right? Excellent read as well, Tala.
Thank you so much, Gray. And Lou, you, of course.
You're welcome. And, you know, I love you, girl. And what did you think about your poem, Tom?
Have you on mute button?
Tom, are you on hold?
No, I'm here. I'm sorry. My phone's
okay.
Talking to Wales. No, I love this this opening. The tears carved my tender heart with the thorns of the rose. I mean, to transfer the tears into the hard, sharp thorn speaks of a deep and strong, painful emotion that renders one, whether it comes from death, the end of a relationship, or any of a number of things, it digs deeply into one's being and one's consciousness, and that image just does it so beautifully. I find it much more overwhelming and striking than the idea of looking for answers that you never find, because that idea of the tender heart being carved by the thorns of a rose and the tears that come is just speaks a thousand different ways and in a thousand different languages. And then when you get to the second verse, it becomes a very subtle effort at trying to distance oneself from all the pain and the hurt of the past. And you're right, so many little things. There are times when you're doing something and all of a sudden find yourself crying about some past event because some little thing happened or some little word was said or just a thought that passed through your mind. And that just brings home the lovely ending. Is there really an end for yesterday? And only when we stop looking back. And that sometimes doesn't happen until we die. In two very quick, short, brief verses, you have managed to speak a whole deep song about grief and all the ways it can touch us and never stop touching us throughout our life. Really stunning piece.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you, Tom. Kathy, are you still here? Kathy? Okay. Well, I want to say goodnight to Kathy. Thank you for a rite of passage for calling in. I will put your poem up and have somebody read it. I'm sorry I didn't get to you before the second hour. Time is flying. So rite of passage. Sorry about that, Kathy. And Frank, would you like to make a comment on
I'll make it brief here because I know you run out of time here. I thought the poem was impeccable there. I like the whole notion there of asking, you know. Sometimes I feel that not all, you know, all the questions that we ask, we don't find all the responses that we can find. I think the only thing that we can do is try to find an understanding of what we're asking. So I thought this poem was very deepful, very insightful as well. And I thought it was a great, great poem as always from her. And so on.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Frank.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Frank. And what did you think, Laurent?
Well, as usual, a brevity with a lot to say. Really a triumph of the art, I think, because when you look at tears carved my tender heart with thorns of the rose and answers we never found, I just come away from the poem thinking, yesterday never dies. And that is important, especially if we're trying to shake away the sorrows that pop up so frequently. Yesterday never dies. Very meaningful piece.
Thank you so much, Laurent.
Thank you so much, Laurent. And Bobby?
I'm going to make an observation. It's going to sound rather... I love Selwa's work. She knows I do. Selwa's like a violin. Her vibrate through her and through her poetry, and the emotions radiate into the surrounding air about her, and just her feelings and her emotions and the way she expresses herself, it saturates the listener. And it just, this brevity is a classic example. I'm looking for answers I will never find. I wish to know how to change myself. Such profound things with such elegant simplicity.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Great.
Such wonderful comments. And I want to apologize to Kathy for not getting to her poem, but our next reader is Tom. And I want to thank you, Tom, for hanging on, at, you know, so you could read this. I appreciate it. Is this the poem you wanted to read, Mirage?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
We're
Mirage. Ready.
Empty park benches wait for old men. I sit in my window watching the bus stop collect people. As the rain brings relief, move over, love, she whispers. Joins me in my staring. Two birds, tired from migration, we sit, silhouetted by window panes and frames, reaching towards those waiting below. We wait for words that never come. End poem.
Well, this is one of my favorite poems you've written, Tom. Because it's so visual, and it's very emotional, and it's very visual, you know, especially right here, you know, sometimes there are no words. Sometimes it's a surrounding or
the warmth of that person sitting next to you or them bringing you a cup of coffee, to just sit in silence and watch the birds, watch the leaves move in the wind, the different shape of leaves, the flowers, the scents, you know, the things that most people don't think to think about. But I have got to say, this was my favorite stanza. As the rain brings relief, move over, love, she whispers, joins me in my staring. Oh, my gosh, I love that. That was fantastic. Because it was just something I would do. This was just beautiful, Tom. I really, really enjoyed this poem. What did you think, Fawa? I don't know if she dropped. Let me look. Because I know she had an appointment. Yeah. Okay, hold on. I have another caller. Caller 703, who's speaking?
That was me. I got dropped again.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, what did you think about this? Salwa's gone, so good night, Salwa. What did you think about this poem, Laurent? Tom's poem.
Yeah, it's a powerful piece, isn't it? When somebody gets lost in something that they're watching, it's a very private moment because that scene is speaking to them in a way that's fairly exclusive. And to have someone be able to join you and share in the moment, almost without comment, two birds tired from migration, we sit silhouetted by window panes and frames. It's really a lovely piece, and it grabs a moment of truth. It's a real look at people and how their minds operate to me in many ways, and beautifully told.
I agree. Thank you, Laurent. Beautiful comment. What did you think, Frank?
Well, I thought the poem was very striking. It's a very beautiful writer. I don't know to what degree if it's strictly personal or it's just an observation of yours, but either way, it's exquisite writing. I have the line there of, moreover, love, she whispers, joins me in my staring. There is that profound notion of love in this poem here. There is that essence there of what we value the most there. When we express love, we value love. And it seems to me when this poem, what it reflects to me there, there is that analogy there of the two birds there, I can definitely see two persons here within that boundary of love. And I thought it was a beautiful writing, very, very explicit writing, my friend.
Thank you, Frank. And thank you for an excellent comment. And Bobby?
Very touching piece. For me, the first line is an absolute grabber. Empty park benches wait for old men. My God, you could spring off into another poem just from that line. because the imagery is just so profound. To talk about two people reaching towards us, waiting below, we wait for words that never come. And when you've got such a close relationship with someone, the words don't come because they're implied. The nonverbal communication becomes so strong that you can put your hand on the other person and they'll know what your thoughts are. And that is a wondrous way he writes of it. I can feel it, and I long for it. That is such a beautiful thing.
I agree. Beautiful comment, Bobby. And Gray, you're our last commenter.
Well, I thought it was wonderfully read, Thomas, to begin with. But, you know, the poem pulls you into this scene and holds your attention right till the very end, masterfully story crafted. I really liked it a lot. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Gray. Okay, so I'm sorry I didn't get to hear Kathy read her poem. And let me go ahead and drop that in. And would you please read this for her, Gray?
Sure.
Give me just a second. Okay. And thank you, Tom. That was a beautiful poem.
Thank you. You all have a nice night.
Good night,
miss
Thomas.
You. Good night, Tom. Miss you. We're going to miss you. Good night.
Buenas noches, my friend.
Bye, Tom. Buenas noches. Okay, so I just put it up, and it's titled Bedrock by Rite of Passage.
Plants in the driest soil always have the deepest roots. Oh, find the bedrock before you judge it a weed and pull.
All right, so I want to thank her for that. I want to thank you for reading. And I really like it when you put in that extra oomph in there for the visuals. Great.
Sounds you know,
better on Wednesday night, though.
We're getting carried away here.
Okay, so I love this picture. To me, the desert is history because the desert used to be underwater. The mountains here, you know, all around us, we find seashells and I can't remember what it's called, coral, on top of the mountains when you go out bike riding and stuff like that. And when it rains, you know, it may be the driest, but when it rains, it is the most, you know, like the sequoia, how the birds go in and they dig their nests in there and they feed their babies, and how this land looks like it's dead, but it's not. It's thriving. It is thriving in beauty and floral, especially during monsoon season. And, you know, sometimes, you know what, don't judge something by its cover. Yeah, I may have a little, you know, hard knocks here and there, but that's who makes me me. And, you know, that's what makes my personality, is it's being able to look past, you know, which I know that people do. They judge you by your cover instead of who you are inside. And I totally agree with this with Kathy. What did you think, Laurent?
I agree with you. You can either take it literally as a wonderful appreciation of the desert, or you can really look at it the way it should be. And that's as we judge a person, we better be careful. We need to find out where the roots are. Some roots are shallow, but those that have depth have longevity and more spunk than you might think. So don't prejudge. beautiful piece.
Agreed. Thank you. Well, I think men look handsome. I was looking at some pictures of Brad Pitt when he was young. And I was looking at some pictures now of him older and more seasoned. And, you know, I just think people, there's just something to aging and beauty. I don't know. Well, it is for me. Thank you, Laurent. What did you think, Frank?
No, I, first of all, I have to agree with that comment. I think all of us have beauty, you know, regardless of our age there. I think we all have that element there. I think the poem itself, you know, really does define really in a sense, you know, you look at the desert, it's a very dry area. You know, you look at that prompt, there's nothing there to see a beauty in the extent of what we notice of it. Yet at the same time, there can be within the most arid climate or region a beautiful flower, you know, a token of nature in its most purest form. And I like that this poem does, you know, it does relate that, you know, that that there is beauty in every place in the world, you know. Sometimes we just don't find it. Sometimes we can't. No, actually not. We don't find it. Sometimes we just don't see it, you know. But it's there.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is the wonderful thing about this poem, and it just gives us that deep, that you know, that moment to reflect and really see and appreciate everything, you know, that's around us, and not take it for granted. There.
So true. Excellent comment. Thank you, Frank. How about you, Bobby?
I lived in the Mojave for 6 years, and that was the second time. First time I lived there for a year and a half, and having been a city girl surrounded by green, it was quite the startling transition for me. But And while this picture shows saguaro, I was used to Joshua trees. But the desert in itself is so, like you said, it's history, but it's also like a person, you have surface appearances, but like a person, it has its stories. Everyone has their story. You have to know that story for the person. It's almost like knowing the knowing the culture of a country. To know the story of a person is to be able to appreciate them. And with the desert, especially when all of a sudden a teal bloom, and you see the kangaroo rats come out and the lizards and what have you, and all of a sudden,
it changes. Like you'll see roadrunners, you'll see
And there's all kinds of life out there that, from the casual glance, you can't evaluate. And it's the same thing with people. At a casual glance, they say we form our opinions of people in the first 30 seconds we meet them. But how sad, because you really have to know a person and their story, like the desert, to appreciate them and see what really is going on underneath, because you find the bedrock before you judge the weed, and it's so true. This is an elegant and simple but profound piece.
Agreed. Thank you, Bobby. And Gray, your last comment?
Yeah, you know, I really liked it. It was well written. It has a clear message, and I thought it was just beautifully done.
Agreed. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. And I've just dropped our next poem in, and it is by Laurent. Laurent,
All right. You
have the mic.
Thank you very much. That could be dangerous. You never know.
That's okay. Dangerous is good for me. But remember, we have that Latina in us. We're bullfighters. You gotta keep that bull.
You got it, baby. All right, this poem seems fitting. Heard voices at the edge of listening, raucous, querulous, like seagulls fighting for scraps, as if Sunday was nothing special to the rest of the week. Church bells pulled at her. He could care less. Sport the greater God to which he prayed. Pregame played at the altar. True believers filled the pews, tithing early at the gates to mindful acolytes. Vocal frustration. Soprano condemns baritone. Heavy front door slams. She stalks to her car, chin out thrust, cheeks fury red, flame of the righteous burning in her bosom. He smiles at the screeching of tires, settling in place with his Dos Equis, cold. Thank you, Lord, for this period of grace, he murmurs under his breath, turning back to the altar, making the sign of the cross, eager for the sermon to begin. He opens his bag of hosts, foregoing intinction, letting salty wafers melt on his tongue, infusing him with combative spirit, calling for heroic sacrifice without fear of interdiction. Sundays, holy to him, filling the day's hours with his prayers. He receives his cold refreshment in the same glass from which his wife drinks her wine. Seems fitting and
cold. Okay. Just because I'm nosy, which I already told you I'm nosy, what inspired this fantastic rite?
I'm sorry, what is what?
I said, I'm a nosy person, so I am wondering what inspired this rite, because right here, I must have been, I was smiling so big, my cheeks hurt, where I saw you, where I was listening, where I said, heavy front door slams.
To be totally, to be completely truthful here, I do what a lot of other people do. I come up with the first line, which was voices at the edge of listening. And I thought to myself, what can I do with that? And basically, I just followed where the words led. And by the time I got to the second stanza, I knew what I wanted to do with it, at least, you know. You know, she goes to church. His church is at home. Like so many men, Sundays is a religious experience. It's football or it's baseball or some other sport. And they will forego the official church for their own church. And, I, a little humor here and there.
Well, this is fantastic. The visuals are excellent. You know, it made me feel like I was watching TBS, that channel that shows the movies from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. And it just made me feel like I was watching these people on Ireland, when they were in Ireland and they were going through something like this. And it just made me grin because, you know, ourselves will always bear ourselves. And it'll bear our personalities. And also, women do not like going somewhere without their husbands, especially if they feel like they need to be with them. So, Lawrence, you don't think so?
I'm here.
So you don't think your wife should drag you to, you know? No?
Well, look, I used to be a lector in the Catholic Church. I've put in my time.
Ah, okay. All right. I love this poem, Lawrence. I really do. It was like watching a movie. Thank you. What did you think about this poem, Frank? Frank?
Sure.
Let me see if you didn't get drunk. Hold on. Frank, are you still there? Yeah, you're still
Hello?
There.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm
yeah,
sorry.
We can hear you
I'm
now.
I'm a bit slow tonight. I'm sorry. I'm a bit tired. But
No. That's okay. I'm tired
ability.
Too.
Yeah. I just want to say I'll try not to be so grandiose here. I just want to say he has a special ability to express in such a wonderful way his wit and his eloquence as well. I really enjoy this piece here. That whole notion there of this, to just sit back and relax there and enjoy the environment, enjoy what you want to see, what you want to drink there, and have someone to be somewhat complicit, I wouldn't say, who understands you there, your significant other there. I really like this whole poem here. It really had its own essence of its own there, I think Laurent eloquently put it there in the first when he said the first stanza what inspired him there. Now I'm starting to understand a bit of Laurent's writing there and see how he ventures there. He has a very great command of diction there in his words, regardless of what he writes.
Agreed. And thank you, Frank. And what did you think, Gray?
I thought you did a wonderful job reading the poem, Lauren. And, the poem itself, it's very powerful in its ability to pull you through the whole rite with its imagery. And you can feel the emotions in it as well. Just a wonderful job, Lauren.
Thank you, Laurent. You did a fantastic job in reading this. Okay, our next reader is going to be Frank. Let me go pick up your poem. Let me see. Sorry, guys. I took a Benadryl, and I'm just like, I'm like a train slowing down to stop. Oh my gosh. Okay, here we go.
I've never seen you look so beautiful as you are tonight, so radiant with the seduction of the moonlight glow stirred, like a fresh red rose I pluck from the lush garden that blooms, with the stimulating scent of your alluring perfume I smell. I just want to undress you slowly with my romantic stare, see the luminous sparkle of your sable eyes shine its color, and explore beyond the gentle ruffle of your silk dress worn, dance with you under the heat of scarlet sheet, flesh to flesh, until our toes curl together and our lips burn in the fire of passion, and our exotic whispers of lovers reach beyond an erotic crescendo with the Spanish sounds of the musical beat in the background as we toast and sip from the taste of a delicious cherry kiss. I could drink from the sangria of your desirable wet lips now, and I would always want to quench my insatiable thirst, unveil the lustful secrets of your natural beauty concealed, discover the deep constellation of the stars twinkling in your eyes. I've never seen you look so sexy and sultry as you are tonight, for I could dance all night long with the sensuality of your skin. You are the luster of a splendid red ruby and an ivory pearl. You are the purity of the striking image of my lady in red. Eres la belleza del color del amor, un rojo tan puro y tan natural, y tu cuerpo es mi cobija. En la noche, tus besos la fuente de mi placer. Mi amor, you are the beauty of the color of love, a red so pure and so natural. In your body is my blanket of the night, your kisses the fountain of my pleasure. Mi amor. Oh, mi amor. You are the lady in red, mi amor, in the con.
Ooh, that was very sultry, very sexy, very visual, and I love that soft jazz in the back that had that beat, you know, that just keeps that insatiable thirst going. What did you think about this poem, Laurent?
Frank always delivers the sensual in a way that amazes me, because he doesn't tend to repeat himself, really. I mean, there's a similar theme in his poetry, perhaps, but that he finds a different metaphor, a fresh way to look at something. I really liked I Could Drink from the Sangria of Your Desirable Wet Lips Now, and I Would Always Want to Quench My Insatiable Thirst. Unveil the lustful secrets of your natural beauty concealed. Discover the deep constellation of the stars twinkling in your eyes. Very beautiful. Very well written.
Oh, I appreciate that. And I'll be very brief here. This was actually I read this the other night, and I told Pam that I didn't have time to do a SoundCloud. And so I said, I'll do it. So I did a SoundCloud. I was thinking that, hoping that she would be on tonight, but I apparently she's not. So this is the SoundCloud that I had promised her.
Oh, that was nice of you. Thank you. What did you think about this poem, Bobby?
I really enjoyed the storytelling. Frank steps you through the event with such a delicacy and sensuality. All of your senses are engaged. His poems are so so sensory, and the two parties in there that he speaks of, there is such a mutuality in the appreciation they have of each other, and his his admiration of women and the way he describes them is so, it is so delicate and so flattering and so admiring. It is a real pleasure to listen to the way Frank sees of dance and love and sensuality. And to Frank, I say, l'audace, l'audace, toujours l'audace.
Merci. And that song there is from the old song of Christopher de Burgh's song, The Lady in Red, back on it.
It's beautiful. And Gray, your last comment?
Yeah, I thought it was a passionate, sensual, image-filled, right, you know, chock full of, passion and sensuality. Just beautiful job, Frank. Excellent read.
Well, I appreciate that. And it was for, I believe it was for Palm's contest there as well. I forgot to mention that. Mm-hmm. I think it was. For her show, I know for it.
Rexy was talking about sangria in here when you were, you know, in the group when you were reading
oh.
this. You know, there is something about kissing somebody after drinking sangria. You know, because red makes you think of love and their lips, and then it also starts to color the tongue. And then you start tasting the spices of the wine. You taste the fruit, the lime, the lemon, the mandarin, the tangerine. And, you know, to have these flavors in your mouth and then to kiss somebody with all those flavors in your mouth, you know, it's like you were saying, it's a seduction, like Bobby was talking about. It's a seduction. It's, how do you say? This is something that you don't rush through. You enjoy. You enjoy that person's taste, their company, their smell, their perfume. And, you know, and of course the mind always undresses before everything starts happening. So very sensual, very sexy, very beautifully done, Frank.
Gracias. Muchas gracias. Thank you very much. Sir.
Mm-hmm. De nada. Muy caliente.
Okay. Gracias.
So here we go. And let me say hi to Robbie. Hello, Robbie. Okay.
I'm going to have to drop now. I just want to say I'm going to have to go now. It was great to be
okay.
on the show
well,
again.
Did you want to wait?
I was...
Did Frank, I know you have to leave, but did you want to listen to Bobby read before you leave so you can like make a comment?
For that. Yes,
if you
I'll
can,
for that,
if you can, please,
that.
I appreciate it. Okay, thank you.
No, she won't.
Okay, Bobby,
okay.
I've dropped your poem in.
My gosh, okay. Where the light dances, blazing white hot August day, thermometer measures something between sultry and spring. The perspiration wanders slowly between my breasts. I mop the daytime from my face. I wring sunshine soaked clothes, and then along you come, and I get hotter. A tiny rivulet of sweat trickles down your neck. I watch as it races for the hollow of your throat. It disappears past your shirt button, and I want to follow it. The broad brim of your hat shades your face. Your dark eyes, hitting them. Eyes where I know light dances. Smile, the heat of your presence. You assure me that later we will steal away together and we will fan each other in the welcome breeze of that promise. The day ends, the sun retires. Our time arrives at last. A trail of clothing marks the path from the door to the shower. In glorious mutual ablution, we earth res. Outside, the heat demands a thunderstorm, nature performing its own ablution. With cooling rain, the night revitalized in the refreshing downpour. while the curtain over the open window flutters in the temperate breeze, we resurrect the day's heat, matching it with our own, as passions and intensity cause temperatures to once again rise. August night, blazing white-hot with desire, or sweltering unclad forms tangled amid cool sheets, the perspiration wanders slowly between my breasts. A tiny rivulet of sweat trickles down your neck. I watch as it races for the hollow of your throat, and I follow it, eager to chase the trail to wherever it may lead. As hunger's heat radiates, soothed by covetous hands, sweet sweat collects in clasped curves and mingles, and our mouths murmur the language of desire throughout the night. We cling together in sublime exhaustion, silhouetted in the moonlight. My head on your chest, I look into your eyes, and I can see the light. In argent glow, gazing into your eyes, I watch as the love light.
Wow. Bobby, I don't think I was breathing through this whole thing. This was sultry, central, just reminded me of the heat. You know, of two bodies blending their heats and cooling their heat. I have got to say that my favorite was where it says, actually, it's the last two stanzas. Because, you know, this is something that been going through the afternoon or through the day, where you spend your entire time in your lover's hands, and, you know, you make love through the night. And, you know, when you finally, you're just laying there and, you know, drifting off to sleep, you look in the person's eyes and you can just see everything that passed through you through the entire night was met, not only physical, but mental. And this was just absolutely stunning. It's beautiful. This was, wow, Bobby. I didn't know you could write like this. You've been hanging around Frank too long?
I think it's, who knows, yeah.
Man, oh my goodness. What did you think about her poem, Laurent?
I don't know who's still on.
Olé.
Okay, Frank, what did you think of Bobby's poem?
Well, I have two terminologies. One would be French, would be ooh la la, and the other one is Spanish, which is typical. Olé, olé. This was just a remarkable ride. I was floored by this piece here. If you weren't breathing there, I was mesmerized. This is just exquisite writing. I mean, your metaphors, the way you just bring us in, they're very intense, you know. It's a central piece. It's a romantic piece. But you just have that natural flair, you know. I know you have it in you. So I don't doubt that. I know you have it in you. You shared some.
Of course she does.
She shared some of those pieces with me. Well, she shared some of those pieces with me before, so I know. hit. No. I thought it was a fantastic. Oh, there you go there. Well, I think you were when you were saying, what was that? Outside the heat dimmed. No, you were talking about something about, oh, there we go. I lost the count there, but you said something about the shower there. So I kind of figured that was me there, but never know there. We've got others there. But I thought the poem was great. Fantastic right there. I thought this was one of your best central poems, but it also had a touch of passion.
Yeah.
And yeah. Lou, you have a poem or no tonight or not?
Well, I do, but I got here. What time is it? I don't even know what time it is.
It's 10:35 my time.
Okay, let me go get it. Yeah. I got it. This was I got Front Page Pick. And this was one of my favorite poems. I wrote this for Laurent.
Okay.
And, of course, it has to do with my heritage and my background. So Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
I forgot I put
I'll
one in there.
Around.
Thank you, Frank.
I'll stay around to listen to that
All
one,
right.
but then I have to go afterwards.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. This was written for a contest for Laurent, where it was Harrow or Harem, Fantasy Fables, Phantasms of Laurent. And I wrote this with my Irish background, and it is titled Daughter of King's Blood. Midnight comes, fired mourned skies, surnames carried in warrior veins. We come, rulers of the ancient Ireland. Past is inked, stained upon our skins. Legs of horses, howling bloody courage, hands, arms, bodies bonded in golden medals, armies of magic legends. Unwavering cries, mortally wounding, cowards' yellowed minds. Rises Celtic bands. Channel your deepest phobias, barbarians. Horns reverberate as drums beat. Weapons clutch burning eternal blood. Druids whisper guide the honor. Minfarts. Bogs. Rivers, mountains, trees speak. Animals guide our shields, beaten spears. Before our chieftain, besides our people, swords shall slice vows to our lands. Shields erect blocking weak blows. Hands grasp warrior swords. Messages death of wooded hawks. Tribute storms of heavy thrusts. Exchanging smaller spear lunges, pierces in close mortal combat. Death is payment. Poisoning air, massive battle cry, none. Shall trespass our homeland. Chaos hail reigns, your heathen war play. Trumpet outcries, we line the hedges in golden thread, golden tarks. Armbands will drip, reflect terrified panic, dread in your grasping blood bubbled, reflected last breath. We are the descendants of gods of war, shielded by divine entities, Sic Nox Sic Sacra Timur. End poem. Okay, Gray, I'll leave you to the commenting.
Okay, what did you think, Frank?
Oh, God, I thought you'd go first there, Gray. But I guess you gave me the honor there. I'm interested now, what is that the Cygnus, Sic Sacra Tumor, is that Irish or is that native? I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I mean, I know a little
Irish.
Bit of Irish, but I knew a little bit.
Yes,
I kind of figured that was Irish.
It means we defend our sacred rights. And, and it says that the torque, the what I was talking about, the metal, it's made out of precious metal. It's open at one end and worn around the neck, and it was believed to give the warriors power. And they were terrified.
Wow.
Terrified. If you go look at history and the wars and the fighting, they were terrified of the Celts. They were considered barbarians. The Romans were even scared of them.
Yeah, Spain had the Celts as well. There's Celtic roots in Spain. I'm sure most people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out to Galicia, a province up there, you do find a lot of Celtic influence over there. So if you ever get a chance to go out there, you would find a lot of Celtic influence there. The poem... it was a very beautiful poem. You know, I know this was written, a year ago. First of all, congratulations for your goal there. Very deserving. I just thought you did a marvelous job. You always have this natural ability to do storytelling, you know, and I know that this is personal for you. And this is what makes it even more special there, that you give us the whole elements there of a lore, of a tradition, of a culture, of a nation, of a people here. And it's really, it's wonderful to think, you know, I know the Celts were thought as barbarians, but then again, you know, if I can ask, I think all of us, you know, You know, any one of us who say we didn't any one of us who says we didn't originate from a barbarian, you know, that's just a whole notion.
That's what they were called. That's what I put it.
Well, they called Native Americans barbarians too. Yeah, that's what I dislike that whole terminology, barbarian. But I think we all have our own roots there, you know. I'll be brief here. Europeans have this habit of thinking of supremacy, you know, and I think that's the wrong analogy there. I think the Native people, you know, all the people, Native American people throughout all the Americas, because there is Natives in Central, South America, these people there, they had their own culture, their own language and that, you know. And if you would think about it, the Europeans themselves were at one time savages as well, you know, if you want to call savage a savage. You know, so this whole notion of who is savage and who is not, I think that's it is ridiculous in the sense that we all came from somewhere and we should all be proud of where our lineage came from to a certain extent and where we define ourselves as well. And I think you did a wonderful job here describing the folks here. I really admire them. I admire all people because I think everyone deserves respect, you know, and everyone should be treated with respect. I think you do a wonderful job always there, and I'm going on too long there. I need to shut up now. I know the show is going to be ending soon, so you just blow my mind all the time with you. I know you bring a lot of your soul to you, right, like me, but you also have a wonderful, wonderful side of you that has beautiful storytelling. And this is a prime example.
Thank you.
So with that, I have to go now, my friends. Take care, Luke.
Good night, Frank.
Thank you, Frank.
Always
good
a
night.
Pleasure.
Great comment. Thank you.
Take care, my friends. Buenas noches. Take care.
And Miss Bobby, Miss Warrior Queen, what do you think? Thank you. Buenas noches.
My goodness, thank you. just call me Zena.
Okay.
Actually, I did have that nickname at one point. In one of the classes, I took an admin. I was in admin school, and it was all officers. I was one of the only two captains, and there was a senior officer. And because I worked out all the time, and they call me Zena.
So can I call you that now?
And if you like,
Zena Warrior Princess.
I actually went one Halloween as Valeria with Conan. Sword strapped on my back, armbands and leggings and the whole nine yards. And I was bodybuilding 6 days a week, and I was maybe like 2% body fat. It was fun. It was fun.
So you will now be known. You will be known as Zena. You're my warrior queen.
Gerard, yeah. I love this. Great, great storytelling. Very powerful piece. A lot of tribal imagery. Is this part of your heritage? I mean, I know you're Native American, but is this? My goodness! What a wonderful hybrid you are.
We traced our family heritage all the way back to Ireland, and because of my dad, and they found out that our name was translated at that time, which I have on my biography, Clan of the Bears, so that we were known as Bears. So
Bears, wonderful.
There's a reason. That's why there's that picture, and you know, because it's part of my heritage and it's part of my family background. Well, it's my heritage. What can I say?
It's a wonderful mixture, wonderful hybrid of two very fiercely proud cultures. Both your Native American and, like I said, Frank said, they refer to them as barbarians, but I think that is a misnomer because they had their own culture, but it was much more oriented to, like the Native Americans, it was rooted in the earth.
Yes.
It was pagan, and then it was Christian, and they had their connections to earth, and they were so fiercely brave that they were in battle terrifying to their adversaries because they were absolutely fearless. And I think you convey that meaning so well. Messages, death of wooden hawks, tribute storms of heavy thrust, exchanging small spear lunges, plunges in close mortal combat. Death is payment. It is an admirable a piece of writing. I mean, it is very powerful.
Thank you.
And conveys a fierce pride in that the particular heritage. So I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Bobby. Okay, well, I have to read this one comment just because Jack wrote it. And I do have his poem up next. He says, well, of course this would be front page pick. I mean, come on. Swords clashing, blood bubbles, and mortal combat, death is payment. Wow. I could really feel the death blow. I would hope not. I would not want. I mean, just think about it. Just think about if we had to live in that time where, well, you know what? You had to learn to fight. Not only did the Celtic women fight, but also the Native American women fought. I mean, this is just, you know, there's so many, many races where the women fought along the men.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm also reminded from your piece of the Spartans, whose mantra was to victorious or on your shield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is why I love radio and these contests, because you never know what's going to come until you start writing. And then, you know, everything that spills out. You know, everything that spills out. Okay, so let me get another poem. All right, and this is by Jack Tomkovic. And Gray, you're our next reader.
Okay, this is called Empty Calories. I almost missed the short-haired Honduran girl, gazing as I slowly peeled back the silvery inner wrapper and began to eat my Hershey bar with almonds. Her mouth twitched, her hands trembled. Can eating a candy bar be a capital crime? I'd like to say my pace slowed, my heart had softened, that I turned and gave her what was left, but this poem only wrote my guilt after and home.
He says he wrote that in 1966. He still thinks it's good. What do you say? It's good. It's good. And I stare at anybody who's eating a candy. Yeah, I mean, because when you see somebody eating a candy, come on, your mouth's going to water. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, let's get some comments. What did you think about this poem, Bobby?
Very relatable. I think having been the observer and also the consumer, it's an interesting experience when you're watching someone eat something quite so decadent. And with me, it's usually something very frothy and chocolate on a plate, you know, and usually sporting the word moose somewhere in the title, you know, and chocolate, of course. And it usually has 6 or 7 layers, and it's very bad for me. it's so decadent. And to be just that same decadence for a Hershey bar, if for someone who's never had one, it just the vicarious experience of the consumption is quite intoxicating.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I agree.
And how about you, Gray?
I thought it was wonderfully written. You know, it has a great cadence to it as it flows through and, you know, describes this scene. But I really liked where he says, hold on here. Can eating a candy bar be a capital crime? I really like that. It was well done.
I thought this was a fantastic poem. You know, it's just, you know, even kids now, if I see some kid wants a candy or something like, you know, I got to buy it for them. I just can't. I know what it's like to grow up without. So if I can give somebody something, I'm happy with it. You know, that just makes me, I'm giving some food, some candy, whatever. Yeah. Wow. I bet that good. Okay. So we've got a little bit more time. I saw that Simon put up a poem and he asked you to read it, Gray.
Okay.
Thank you, Jack. Okay, let me get it.
Okay, this is called Free Right by Simon Guest. Belly up pork upon fires of hell, times of futures past, ignore those of present. Screams come from within. Darkness knows no bounds. I will come into light when I am ready. Kill them. Prisoners clamber up walls, forever slipping, falling. No way out, no escape. A deafening silence. No one gives an olive branch. Care for me. No one gives no length. An impaled head with open eyes, filled teeth. Crows and ravens wait for the hammer to fall, but still a hand guides towards death. End poem.
Mm. That's a powerful poem. And he said that Simon wrote, this is a free write that was produced just putting down what came to my head within 5 minutes. There was no research, no thinking, no procrastinating. And he said that, you know, that this had to do with death horror. Well, it does. Very deep, you know, for him to write something like this. What did you think about this poem, Bobby?
Very stark and powerful piece. If I try and do a free write, I usually end up with rubbish. This is quite the impressive write, the visual imagery, very powerful, very captivating. No way out, no escape, a definite.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dark, very grim, very, very moribund, but very well written.
I agree. Yeah. And Gray, what did you think of the poem you read?
You know, for what he did, for just writing down what came to his head, he's got a pretty dark pulling mind as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of darkness in this, right? And it's rather haunting in its imagery and its emotions.
Okay. I agree.
Well done.
Okay. I think we've got enough for another poem. This is by Becky Upchurch. She's the next poem you had in line. I've been going back and forth. And Bobby, you are our next reader. Let me go ahead and drop that in.
There it is.
There it is.
Piped Thoughts Out Loud by Becky Upchurch. Poem. Well, I believe great poetry comes from being pierced, that love is the only wound opened. I think of foxhole and politician, easy metaphors to grasp, yet wonder where love is in one and obvious in the other. Great poetry, is it between lines? Logophiles armed with pens, keyboards intent to send messages from trenches. or does it come from blatant orders from a demanding muse, manipulating nouns, verbs, metaphors, but not truly present in the fight for the right words? Is it length, when I prefer brevity more than keeping focused in stanza after stanza, though excellent as many words, much fewer? Length, time, has no purpose into words and images. For Picasso to meet Michelangelo, would the chapel be a fresco for a pope? And will the two fingers ever meet? And poem.
That was a fantastic read. Bobby, this was a fantastic poem about so many things that, you know, that we question. It depends what you're writing for. Some just write to write like Simon did. Some are just inspired by experiences like Jack. Some of it is passionate things that we have gone through that we've shared, like you brought out Bobby and Frank. You know, and it's to me it's amazing. How you can see and read different things. But you know, that's why I always go look to see what they, you know, to see if this was inspired by something they were just thinking, or it was a contest or something. This is just fantastic. What did you think of her poem, Gray?
I thought it was pretty epic, and it's, you know, it's the reality. You know, it it has a clear message to it, and but it dances its way through to the end. Were Picasso to meet Michelangelo, would the chapel be a fresco for Pope? And will the two fingers ever meet? Wonderful, right? Excellent job.
Agreed. And what did you think, Bobby?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. The visual imagery was very powerful. It's got a lot of profound thoughts in this. Great poetry. Is it between lines? And she almost makes in the beginning, the second stanza, a foxhole politician, easy metaphors to grasp. It's almost like poetry is warfare. It's you're waging a war with your mind and the words, and you're fighting with the words to organize them in a way that it conveys what you're thinking and feeling. And you know, are you fighting? Are you winning the battle, or are the words? Does it come from blatant orders, from a demanding muse, manipulating nouns, verbs, and metaphors, but not truly present in the fight? Again, she makes it sound like warfare, which I think is an interesting parallel in the way she writes it. Is it length? I think the whole piece speaks of the difficulty in writing what you're feeling clearly, to convey your meaning in a such a way that it still allows the reader some latitude to also experience it through their own life experiences and their own filters. And I love the last line. That is so subtle. I really, really fucking love the last line. Will the two fingers ever meet? That is the visual imagery of Adam reaching forward and the image of God reaching and the two fingers being inches apart. I love that. That is just such a profound piece, because it also says, will you ever get to where you're going with what you're trying to write?
Yeah, fantastic comment. Well, I'm going to have to say goodnight because we are at the end of our show. I want to thank all our callers and readers and commenters and everybody that was hanging out. I want to thank Sawa and Phil and Tom and Laurent and Kathy and Frank and Bobby and Gray. I love you guys. You guys make me happy. I love you guys.
Love you, too. Have a good night, everybody.
Love you, too. All right, you have a good night. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.